Now we're back at our anchor headquarters in New York with continuing coverage of the British general election. Through the cooperation of the British Broadcasting Corporation, and indeed with listeners in our Latin American service throughout the Western Hemisphere, and on WGBH in Cambridge, Massachusetts, WRVR in New York City, and on WAMU in Washington, D.C. We are bringing continuing coverage until the results are clear of the British general election, on a date that will be remembered long after this election, perhaps for one of the major developments of this century, the extent and the meaning of this development as yet unknown to the outside world. We are speaking not of the developing situation in Britain, where there may be a Labour victory and the prime ministership of Harold Wilson, or a Conservative victory and Sir Alec Douglas Hume. We do not refer to the situation in Britain, where the change would be minor compared to the potential of change within the Kremlin, where today, as you all know by now, Nikita Khrushchev was replaced as the leader of world communism and the Soviet Empire. Khrushchev relieved of both of his jobs, replaced perhaps temporarily, perhaps permanently, by Alexei Kosygin as the prime minister and by Leonid Brezhnev as the head of the Communist Party. And Khrushchev's son-in-law himself, Alexei Adzubay, the editor of Izvestia, was also replaced. And so the extent, the meaning, the background perhaps may never be known. But the world will look with a much more concerned eye toward Moscow than toward London. For no matter what the outcome of the British general election, the course of Britain in the world is no mystery, and the change will not be significant. But the question of what happens should the change in Moscow have meaning that we do not yet as understand, of course, remains unanswered to this hour. And so the great contrasts of history, especially apparent tonight, the democracy of Britain at work, the secrecy and the totalitarianism of the Soviet Union working behind closed doors in Moscow. The latest on the British election returns, not to forget the major election story of the evening, shows the Labour Party continues its gain at the expense of the Conservative Party. 10 seats for Labour at the expense of the Conservatives, and so the latest tally, 53 constituencies reported for Labour, 25 for the Conservatives, 1 for the Liberal Party, showing a net gain of 10 for Labour at the expense of the Conservatives, and on the basis of these early returns, 2 predictions come out. 1, the prediction of the Reuters News Service saying that the 3.2% shift in the tally to this hour shows that there will be a deadlock between the Conservative Party led by Sir Alec Douglas Hume and the Labour Party led by Harold Wilson. Meanwhile, an independent source, the Independent Television Network of Britain, through their advanced computation based on the very earliest return from the Cheltenham constituency, showed in their projection that there would be a Labour sweep, and a sweep by considerable proportions. Of course, we will have to await the meaning of all of these early predictions, and as we said before, it may be perhaps 2 to 3 hours more before there is a very clear picture of what it means. Let's pick up what we were bringing you just moments ago in terms of the background of this election. You recall that we presented the ideas of the health minister of the Conservative Party as he spoke earlier this week on the BBC. Let's hear now what the Minister of Pensions, Richard Wood, says about the Conservative position on pensions as opposed to his Labour opponents.
People ask, what have the Conservatives done for pensioners? Everyone else seems to be getting a bit more. Oughtn't the pensioners to have their share? I'll try to answer these questions. During the whole 13 years of Conservative government, pensions have proportionately gone up a good deal faster than prices and faster than average earnings. This didn't happen under the socialists. In the words of one of them, pensioners in those years were cheated even of the modest slice of the national cake which they'd been promised. For every shilling increase in the cost of living under the socialists, retirement pensions went up by only 7 pence. And for Conservatives, for every shilling increase in the cost of living, retirement pensions have gone up by 2 shillings and 4 pence. Yet the socialists are still trying to persuade the British people that theirs is the party which looks after pensioners best. Socialists are today promising bigger and better pensions. Whatever Mr. Harold Wilson may be doing with his slide rule, we have no intention of entering an election auction. Socialists tell us that their objective is half pay on retirement. But they don't say how long it would be before we reach the objective, how much it would cost, or how it would be paid for. Unlike the socialists, we have already made public the cost of our plans for the future. Based on a 4% rate of economic growth, we've estimated that the expenditure on pensions and benefits in the year 1967 to 1968 will be £360 million more than it was last year. And this increase is an increase in real terms, so that any change in prices will be taken care of. When people have retired for some time, they tend to become more dependent on other people in all sorts of ways. Belongings wear out, savings get...
There's a picture of what the Minister of Pensions, the Right Honourable Richard Wood, had to say earlier this week on the BBC broadcast that was given over to the Conservative Party on the subject of pensions and the Conservative Party position. The latest returns now, since our last one a few moments ago, show that the Liberal Party has lost a seat, and this was another predicted loss for the Liberal Party. It now gives the loss of 10 to the Conservatives and a loss of 1 to the Liberal. All 11 seats were picked up by the Conservative, by the Labour Party. And so the Liberal loss of 1, and now apparently there is a Labour Party gain of more seats, because we hear now that the Conservative Party has lost 13 seats. Again, it is extremely difficult at this point for those of you in our audience who are not familiar with the geography of Britain, and indeed there are 630 pieces of territory of varying sizes at stake, to try to give you too much of the various constituencies. We are very closely watching the constituency of Highton, which is the home constituency of Harold Wilson, and the home constituency of Sir Alec Douglas Hume. Both are expected to win in their constituencies. Indeed, if they lost, and if their party won, the situation would be embarrassing and perhaps fatal to their ambitions to be the Prime Minister. I would say, in a sense, as far as we know, this is so far unprecedented. So, as we said, the situation at this moment, it shows that there is a loss of 13 seats now by the Conservative Party, a loss of 1 seat by the Labour Party, and an increase of 14 seats by the Labour Party, further adding weight to the conviction that there will be perhaps a rather extensive gain on the part of Labour. The big question that remains open at this hour is, will that gain be big enough to give the Labour Party a victory, or will it be just big enough to create a deadlock? And if there were a deadlock, will the Liberal Party have sufficient power left in order to come out as the balance of power? And now we hear that the Labour Party has gained another seat. There has been a 14th seat lost by the Conservatives. We said that the Liberals also lost a seat. Let's switch over now and listen again for a moment to the BBC coverage as they're explaining some of the more recent returns.
Walton and West Derby in Liverpool. How do you read this, Norman Hunt?
Well, the swings in the Liverpool area really are absolutely extraordinary because, and by extraordinary, I mean extraordinarily large as far as the Labour Party is concerned. Liverpool Kirkdale, which was one of those conservative marginals which the Labour Party hoped to win, they needed a swing of 3.3% to get it. They have, in fact, got 7.8% swing. Now, this was the more important, because in a sense it was a crucial seat, this Liverpool Kirkdale, because 4,500 of the electors had moved out of there since 1959. This was would help the Conservatives to retain the seat, and indeed the Conservatives have got some hopes of retaining it. But in fact, they haven't retained it, and there's this swing to Labour of between 7 and 8%. And this is a constituency in which there's no help at all, in a sense, from the Labour Party's point of view, from the Liberal Party. It was a straight fight between Conservative and Labour in 1959. It was a straight fight again this time. And in a straight fight, it scored a swing to the Labour Party, as I said, 7.8%. Liverpool Walton, another big swing to the Labour Party, 8.2%. They needed, in fact, 4.6% swing to get it. They've got nearly twice as big a swing there as they needed. The same again is true of Liverpool West Derby, another of these conservative marginals in Lancashire. Here they are, the Labour Party wanting a swing of 0.4% to get this one. They've notched up a swing of 8.7%. These are three very big swings indeed for the
Labour Party.
I think I must cut you off there, Norman Hunt, because we have a rather important piece of news from Ian Stansk. A few moments ago, the result was declared emphatic, in which one of the candidates is Patrick Gordon Walker, the Labour Shadow Foreign Secretary.
Here is the returning officer, Alderman C.B. Williams, who is the mayor of Sleddick, waiting for silence so that he can make his announcement. Now, do you mind if I have my say now? Do you mind if I have my say now? I do not propose to read this to Bedlam. If you can't be quiet, you'll wait until you are. I, the parliamentary election, Smethwick Borough constituency, date of election 15 October 1964. I, the undersigned, being the returning officer for the constituency above mentioned, hereby give notice that the total number of votes given for each candidate at the election was as follows, namely, Davis, Dudley, Trevor,
independent,
262, Gordon Walker, Patrick Christian,
Labour,
14,916, Griffiths, Peter, Harry, Steve,
Conservative,
16,690. So it's a conservative gain.
And so you just heard those returns. Patrick Gordon Walker, the shadow cabinet member who would become the Minister of Foreign Affairs, has been defeated in his constituency. Now, this, of course, is a significant development. Patrick Gordon Walker, very high up. This is Mitchell Krause. We'll return in 5 minutes.
The future. Late returns from London. In a moment, details.
If you've been waiting to order your copy of the 1964 edition of the World Radio Handbook, you don't have to wait any longer. The 1964 edition costs $3.50, delivered to you by ordinary mail, or $6 by airmail. Send your check or international money order payable to the World Radio Handbook to Box 32, Hellerup, Denmark. That's $3.50 for surface postage, or $6 by airmail to Box 32, Hellerup, Denmark.
And now the news. Less than 1 hour after official word came today that Khrushchev has been replaced, reliable sources in Moscow revealed that Alexei Adjubay, Mr. Khrushchev's son-in-law, had been replaced as editor of the government newspaper Izvestia. Leonid Brezhnev, who assumes the more powerful of the two positions Khrushchev held, was personally groomed for the job by the retiring Soviet leader. But how closely Brezhnev will hew to the Khrushchev policy of coexistence with the Western world is an open question. The answer to that question is Topic A in Washington right now. Senator John Sparkman, Democratic member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, puts the problem this way.
I think a lot will depend upon an understanding as to just who these successors are, what kind of men they are, what their philosophy of government is. I don't know much about them.
Speaking, Senator Sparkman. There is also a flood of speculation in the Soviet capital, as ABC's Sam Jaffe reports from Moscow.
What Chairman Khrushchev stepping down, as far as his in his role as chief of the Communist Party and head of the Soviet government means is anyone's guess. One very high-placed Western observer says that the chairman has made too many mistakes. That is, that he is stepping down and retiring. Whether this means a hard-nosed policy toward the United States and toward the West is anyone's guess. But I think the primary thing is the Sino-Soviet. So many communist parties are dropping away from the Soviet Union's position and their tough position against China that some people here feel that maybe they should take a more solid stand.
That evaluation from ABC correspondent Sam Jaffe in Moscow. Elsewhere, returns are pouring in from today's elections in Great Britain. The latest word now from ABC's election team in London. First, Ray Maloney.
We
The opposition Labor Party is swinging into an early lead in the British general election, winning 16 seats so far from the ruling Conservative government, with 123 results declared out of the total of 630 seats at stake. For the background, over to Al Adel.
The voting trend toward the Labor Party continues. If it's to win, Labor needs a swing vote of 3.5%. At the moment, that percentage stands at 4.3%. In terms of tangible power, this means Labor will come in with a majority of some 30 seats. However, the political race is far from finished. Al Adel with the ABC General Election Team in London.
On Wall Street here at home today, prices went down at first and then partially recovered. Dow Jones Industrials wound up with a net loss of 6.74 on a volume of about 6.5 million shares, and this is ABC News.
From our anchor headquarters in New York City, Radio New York Worldwide and its network of stations in the United States and overseas bring you coverage of the British general election. With the cooperation of the British Broadcasting Corporation and heard in the United States on WRVR New York, WGBH in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and the radio station of the American University in Washington, WAMU. Our Radio New York worldwide broadcast also being beamed to the Caribbean and the Western Hemisphere. This continuing coverage of the British general election coming to you on a very significant day in world history, a day that marks a democratic election in the United Kingdom and a change of government by undemocratic means in the Soviet Union. The public of Great Britain, the electorate of one of the great nations in the present world and in world history, voting today for the first time in 5 years for the general election for 630 seats of the House of Commons, while behind the closed walls of the Kremlin, a dramatic change, a surprise change, a sudden change. Khrushchev out, and for the moment, Brezhnev in as the party leader, and Kosygin in as the prime minister. The president, Anastas Mikoyan, who was put in office in July, replaced Brezhnev, who was to have become the assistant to Khrushchev. It remains to be seen what this means. As for Britain, the election returns are coming in, and as we would say here in America, hot and heavy. These returns are showing continuing gains for the Labour Party, headed by Harold Wilson, at the expense of both the Conservative Party, headed by the Prime Minister for the past year, Sir Alec Douglas Hume, and the Liberal Party, Joe Grimmins' party, which has lost one seat. As of the latest, it appears that there are as many as 15 seats now to be gained by the Labour Party at the expense of the Conservative and one at the expense of the Liberal Party. The Labour gains include such areas as Acton, Bolton East and West, Bury and Radcliffe, Keighley, Kirkdall, Toxteth, Walton, West Derby in the Liverpool area, and in London, Barons Court, Battersea South, Holborn, St. Pancras South, and Southport, the Stockport North and South constituencies, as well as Watford. Now, it might be interesting to note that according to the predictions that had been presented earlier, the one key constituency that has never missed in a general election for as many years as most Englishmen can remember is the constituency of Battersea South. Now, Battersea South has gone Labour. Now, this may not mean anything, but there's an expression here in America, as Maine goes, so goes the nation. And so for so many years, the state of Maine went Republican. It held up, but it went Democratic in some key elections, too. Now, whether one could say, as Battersea South goes, so goes Britain, remains to be seen. But Battersea South has turned out for Labour, and this indeed could be a pivotal return. We would also like to add at this particular point that as we have looked over the returns as they have come in from the very first return from the constituency of Cheltenham, which arrived just about an hour and 15 to 20 minutes ago, which showed a Labour victory and a gain of 3.2%, it seems that the returns have continued to maintain that edge for the Labour Party. 3.2 to 4%, showing a shift of voters, and this shift indeed showing that there was a swing toward Labour. And now we see, and Miss Dorothy Mills, who is assisting us here in our broadcast and bringing us all of the up-to-date details, both from the BBC and Reuters, indicates that the percentage is 3.4%. So that is slightly higher, and that is on the first 79 seats. Now, if one takes the plurality of the Conservative Party in this present parliament, which ended just before the election as it was called, one sees that a swing of 3.4% would do what the Reuters news agency predicted earlier, and that is throw the election into what one might term a deadlock. Of course, neither party wants a deadlock. But in certain circumstances, a deadlock is better than a defeat, for there is always the possibility that that deadlock will result by the result of by-elections, these elections that occur between the general elections, or as the result of a swing of some liberal seats. Now, the question remains as to whether the deadlock will be such as to permit the Liberal Party to maintain the balance of power. Advance and some of the earlier predictions said that if there were a deadlock, Liberal would probably go Labor, and that the Conservative Party would lose. But of course, when there is a deadlock, all bets are off, and very frequently it depends upon just what discussions occur. One of the significant developments, as far as the Labor Party is concerned, and a bit of an anomaly in this whole circumstance, was the defeat of Patrick Gordon Walker, who was in the Labor Party's shadow cabinet, designated to be the foreign minister, and one of the great powers of the Labour Party. He was defeated in his own constituency, the first of the major figures of the party who has lost in his bid, and his loss has been attributed by some to one of the major issues in the campaign, the so-called racial issue, which revolves around the immigration of large numbers of dark-skinned members of the British Commonwealth to Britain, which increased in unemployment in an area and gave rise to some question of whether or not racial prejudice would be an issue. This, in a sense, is similar in some degrees to what has been known as the white backlash issue here in the United States. And later in the evening, we will, of course, be attempting to bring you some of the ideas that exist in both campaigns, the American and British, that run parallel. We'd like also to say that the Postmaster General, Reginald Bevans, lost his seat in the constituency in which he was running, while Duncan Sands was re-elected. There's no word in yet that we know of, as far as we have heard, on the seats held by the two-party leaders, Sir Alec Douglas-Hume or Harold Wilson in Hyten and elsewhere in the country. Because, of course, as we indicated earlier, one must be elected to the House of Commons, and it would present a very difficult and embarrassing situation if the leader of the party himself were defeated and yet his party went on to win. In fact, that might mean that the party must seek a new leader. We'll be checking on that particular point later on to be sure that that is legally the case anyway. But we will give you the returns as they come in from those districts. The latest results just brought to my attention show that the Conservatives now have won 55 seats, Labor 84, the Liberals won, and there are still 490 constituencies to report. And we might add that not all of those 490 constituencies will be counted or made public tonight. You may have heard earlier in our monitor of BBC returns that frequently a constituency makes an announcement and there is quite a cheer that goes up when the result is known. And that is usually the total result. There's no partial vote. Of course, all are regulated by official recounts if there's any question. Well, that gives you an idea of where the returns stand right now. And the returns in the British election, of course, will continue to come in throughout the evening. But let's go back, as we have been doing since our coverage began, bringing you background on the British general election, the first in 5 years, and the positions of the two parties. Women are playing a larger role in British politics than ever before. In fact, we note from a recent item that appeared in the New York Times that in this year's general election, the number of women in British politics runs to 90 running for seats in the House of Commons, and this compares with 79 in the general election of 1959. In addition, Lady Douglas Hume and Mrs. Harold Wilson have been on the hustings, campaigning for their husbands, both in their own constituencies and appearing nationally, getting into the public eye. And they have been traveling. Their roles have been quiet compared to the roles sometimes played by American women. Nonetheless, women have appeared. Joan Hall of the Conservative Party, in a recent broadcast on the BBC, describes what role women have in politics, at least from the Conservative Party viewpoint.
If this election were left to the women, the Conservatives would be in on a landslide. That has long been my opinion, and it's been confirmed each day as I've been out campaigning. Women take a more realistic view of events. We judge things as they are, and not on their political importance. We know that there are more new homes today, and better homes too. We know that the country is more prosperous, and that there are more jobs. But we also know that there is a steady improvement in the number and quality of schools and hospitals. But perhaps as important to the woman is the quality and variety in the shops. It's much better today than it was 10 or 15 years ago. Today, we women have a mind of our own. We believe in freedom of choice for the individual and think nothing of controls and regimentation. And that's why by nature we are conservative. And that is why all that socialism stands for builds up in us an immediate resistance. In the family, women want prosperity so that they can do things for others. So that the children, and the elderly too, can have those little extra things that count. For them, prosperity has a purpose. And that's why prosperity with a purpose is a good theme for the Conservative programme in this election. Women will go to vote a week today, ready to make their choice between the Conservative way of life and the Socialist way of life. And whatever we say outside the polling station, it's what we do inside that really matters. And only we ourselves know that we have voted Conservative.
That was Joan Hall speaking for the Conservative Party as she appeared on the BBC earlier this week. This coverage of the British general election is coming to you from Radio New York Worldwide in cooperation with the British Broadcasting Corporation. Our broadcast continues in 1 minute.
Are you a dial twister in search of the latest, most completely reported news? Then dial no further. You found what you're looking for. Radio New York Worldwide News. At Radio New York, we have a full staff of competent reporters and news writers, correspondents around the world, direct lines to the United Nations, plus broadcast facilities at the World Body. This is augmented by the full news facilities of the ABC Radio Network.
This is Arthur Van Horn, ABC New York.
Don Gardner, ABC News, New York.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is John Cameron.
In addition, complete wire coverage from Reuters, UPI Press, UPI Radio, UPI Latin America, UPI Business, the UN Wire Service, Telex and RCA communications facilities from points around the world. That's how much we care about the news at Radio New York Worldwide.